So today, for the anti-marketing podcast, which is what we're going to call it until somebody else probably tells me that I need to call it something else since I haven't fully formed a name or a logo or anything of that nature yet. Today, I want to introduce you to one of our co-hosts, who is a very dear friend of mine, Najib Khan.
Hey, hey. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
We are meeting in our new fancy space in Gather.
It's beautiful.
Right?
It's a really nice space for what it is.
Right. Like, I had been into the regular space before, so I had seen the offices and I had seen all the other things, and yep. I was like, yeah, I can do this sight unseen.
Right.
I trust that your podcast booth is fantastic.
Right.
And it is. It's perfect.
No, this is great.
Yeah. And they even, like, made it appropriately branded and pretty with their soundproofing.
That's right.
So, Najib, do you mind doing, like, a little, I don't know, elevator intro?
Elevator speech?
Yeah.
Not the 15-second version, right?
No.
Just maybe a quick synopsis.
Yeah, I like a synopsis.
Yeah, so I'm Najib Khan. I've been in the banking industry now for, gosh, over 15 years. It's crazy to think that I've spent the duration of my life in one sector of the economy. You know, I didn't fall into it. It's something that it kind of didn't really interest me at first. So I come from a financial household background, right? My dad's an accountant, my sister's an auditor, and you know, I somehow didn't want to really do that in high school. If you met me in high school, I was played sports. I was a little bit of a jock, a little bit of a nerd, a little bit of everything. And I really didn't have any direction in high school as far as where I was going to go. But I loved cars, right? So I always liked working with my hands. And so I did 3 years of automotive, and I got certified to be an ASE technician for Porsche. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do.
That's very cool. I did not know that about you.
Yeah, so I got certified, and I quickly realized that I didn't want to turn my hobby into a career. That just wasn't for me. And so I worked at like a local tire shop for some time up in Northern Virginia, and my sister was working in banking at that point, and she said, hey, like, why don't you like switch out the blue collar for the white collar, right? And I said, well, sure, I'll give it a whirl. Never owned a suit in my life, never tied a tie in my life, never owned a white collar in my life, right? And so got my first job in banking as a part-time peak time teller. For those of you that are familiar with Dulles Airport in Northern Virginia, it was in the arrivals section. Specifically, Carousel 8. So Carousel 8 is I can still see it to this day. It's now been converted into a Capital One because Capital One bought Chevy Chase Bank, which is the bank I started with. And you know, I really didn't have any kind of passion for banking. It just wasn't really my thing. But I think what I really had a passion for was helping people, right? And to my core, that's who I am. So if you ever ask me, was I meant to be a doctor or save somebody's life or do brain surgery? No, that's just not who I am. But if you ask me, like, hey, can I help somebody get on the right path to being a better version of them from where they are today, that's 100% where I am, right?
As a friend of Najib who did a whole 30 with him for an entire month in January, I can attest to this being true.
Yeah, no, it's for me, it's really about, you know, I think, you know, breaking down financial literacy to everybody, right? So I started as a part-time peak time teller, worked my way through the bank network, eventually went to a credit union. So I work for a credit union now and here locally. And I love the credit union space, largely because we're not shareholder driven. We're really focused on the community. We're really focused on small businesses. We're really focused on just giving back, right? And so that really aligned with who I was as an individual and who I am as an individual. And so for me, going to the credit union space was great. And then I you know, worked in the credit union space for a little bit, went to a commercial bank for about a year, and I was like, realized that was a mistake, right? Commercial banks are just different in the way of how they run themselves. They're shareholder driven. Yeah, they're focused on the community, but they still have a bottom line, right?
They're looking at the end dollar.
That's right, yeah. So they're looking at their balance sheet. They're looking at, you know, the net income. That's really what they're focused on. And the corporate CEOs are compensated by their shareholder price or their stock price, and shareholders want a higher stock price and so on and so forth. So that just didn't align. Don't get me wrong, the commercial bank that I worked for was a great organization. Right? Nothing to be bad about being said about them, but it just didn't align with who I was. So in 2015, I got the opportunity to go work for Langley Federal Credit Union here in Hampton Roads. And I went there as a financial advisor, and I was fully licensed and have been fully licensed since. And then in 2017, my then boss retired. And so I, not thinking, you know, hey, nothing's going to come of it, I went to our CFO and I said, hey, you know, if I was running the program, here's what I'd do. Right. And so Martin Luther King Day of 2018, they tapped me on the shoulder and said, we'd love for you to be the program manager. And I said, okay, cool. Let's do it.
That's awesome.
And so I became the program manager. And then in 2019, I became the VP of Langley Financial Services. So, you know, Langley Financial Services does the investment services division. We also have a property and casualty division. Investment services is really where my heart is. I think going back to that financial literacy piece, there's so many people that, you know, look at, you know, what's happening in the news cycle with GameStop, right? And they have that FOMO, that fear of missing out, right? But what people don't understand is context, right? You know, that there's a lot of risk involved there. And so my job, you know, that I've kind of imparted to myself is that I really want to help people to understand that context, right? And really understand that it's more than just putting your money in the stock market and hoping something works out. It's just not that. You got to have a strategy, right? So I always use this analogy with my clients, and I say, you know, when you think about our military and they go into situations where they're backed into a corner, they go into a war situation, they always have strategy, right? They always have a game plan. And that same game plan should apply for you, right? You know, when you watch The Wizard of Oz, you know, Dorothy is to follow the yellow brick road, right? Everybody should have a yellow brick road. And my opinion, and that's just my opinion, take it for what it's worth. Right. And so my hope is that the work that I do for the duration of my career and the people that I run into, my hope is just to educate. Right. It's not to position them into doing something they don't want to do or sell them something they don't want to need. That's just not what it is. For me, it's really about how do we help people. Right. That's just the core of who I am. And I always hearken back to that. And so for me, it's just literally about, can I help somebody make an incremental difference in their life, even in the most nominal way, right? Even if it means that they just started their first emergency savings account and they've never had a savings account, right? Or it's their first, you know, stock purchase or a mutual fund purchase or an ETF purchase that they've never owned, and how do we get there? But I also kind of pivot to a lot of businesses, right? So there's a lot of small businesses today who I've had the opportunity to work for and I've been very fortunate to work with. And they look at themselves and say, I'm going to put 100% of my sweat equity, my blood, sweat, and tears into my business. And they tie up all of their assets to that business, right? And they never really think about an exit strategy.
Right.
My hope is that, you know, through this podcast, through other channels, that small businesses realize that they do have other outlets, right? And they have to be able to invest in themselves outside of just the business alone. And that one day, they're going to have to hang it up.
Right.
Right. And so when they hang it up, what is that strategy? Unfortunately, a lot of businesses don't think about it until 20, 30 years in.
Right.
If they make it that long. Right. And by then, it's like there's a lot of cobwebs you got to work through, a lot of sticky. But I always say what I just said earlier about having a plan. Right. I think small businesses, you know, a business owner I know that they're going 100%. I've met with business owners who say, hey, Najib, I work 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day, you know, 7 days a week. I get that, right? Because that's your business, that's your livelihood. That's everything you have is in that business.
Right, and no one's ever going to care as much about it as you do. So 100%. So there's that like mentality of like, I have to do it.
That's right, yeah. And what a lot of business owners, you know, sometimes forget is how do I extract out some of that sweat equity and put it aside for the long haul?
Right.
Because at a certain point, you're going to have to fold the tent and you're going to have to hang it up, not permanently as in sell the business, but maybe transition away.
Right.
Right. You know, I've met with, you know, businesses who, you know, they're best of friends. One does operations and sales. The other one, you know, out there running the actual business, and they partner together and they've been in partnership for 40 years, but don't have a buy-sell agreement in place. Right.
That's not even a thing I would think about. Yeah.
Yeah. That could be a detrimental thing if one person dies.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or some sort of compensation plan in place that, well, what if one party passes away? What happens to the business? because there's some equity built into that, right? Somebody owns a piece of that. So I think for me, it's really about how do we just educate, mm-hmm. right? It's not about just making the next buck, because everybody can make a buck.
Right.
Right. So I manage a team of 4 advisors, me being the 5th one. And I always tell my team of advisors, we're kind of like McDonald's, right? If you think about it, we all have the same menu. Mm-hmm. So if you went to Edward Jones and you went to Raymond James and you went to Bank of America and you went to a private wealth group, we all kind of have the same menu of solutions and products. But what differentiates us from them, right? We all know Chick-fil-A, right?
Right.
We, you know.
Yes.
And we all somewhat love it or hate it for what it is. But what's the one thing that everybody knows about Chick-fil-A? My pleasure.
Right, 100%. Like, you know that they're going to say thank you in whatever way they're going to say thank you. And usually will, it's my pleasure.
Yeah. And they will bend over backwards to make it so great for you. Now, does Chick-fil-A have a similar menu to that of McDonald's or Burger King? Sure, they're fast food, similar menus. But it's the differentiating factor that keeps people going back to them,
mm-hmm.
right? It's their service levels. And so that's what I really try to impart to my team is that, you know, it's so important that we, you know, focus on the user, the client, the consumer, versus what we, you know, have in our tool belt, right? Because what we have in our tool belt, everybody else has.
Right, so what makes you different.
That's right. And how do we drive value, mm-hmm. right, and the benefit towards that? So that's my stump speech.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm Najib Khan, and I approve this message.
Yeah, I approve your message, too. Well, it's so funny because so a lot of what you said is how I operate my business, too. Like I look at it and I say, I literally told somebody on the phone before we, like, got into this podcast. I was like, mm-hmm. hey, you could go on Google and learn how to do what I do. Like, it's not a secret. You want to Google it. You want to figure it out on your own. Like, totally cool. I'll teach you. Yeah. Like, it's not – what I do isn't rocket science. But the difference in what I do versus what somebody else does
mm-hmm.
is how I get to know you.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't – like, my general core belief is I don't help people sell. I help them buy. Or I don't sell to people. I help them buy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to sell you something you don't need. Right. I'm not going to tell you to do something you don't need to do. And
right.
I think – in your situation, I find it really interesting because I don't know about most other people, but I think I probably, before I met you and knew you, had the general idea that, like, wealth management advisors are just going to be like, hey, put all your money here, do all these, and they're looking at the bottom line for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so interesting to hear your, like, your elevator pitch and your speech about where your core beliefs lie, because I think people need to understand that that's something you see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I would like to believe that a majority of people in your position operate the same way that you do, or
mm-hmm.
maybe they don't,
mm-hmm.
but it's nice to know that there is a person out there like you who, like, actually cares,
yeah.
and it's not just about, if I have $10 to invest versus having $100 to invest, you're going to tell me how to do it the right way. And obviously those are tiny numbers, and I understand that's not whatever,
right.
but it's nice to know that people like that exist. And I think that's the whole point of this podcast is, like,
mm-hmm.
let's forget the preconceived anything.
Yeah.
And recognize that the reason people are successful is you start at this 9 to 5 or evening, even
right.
afternoon, like you said, 12
right.
to 5
right.
thing, and then turn it into a career that we really care about. Like, taking it from this tiny thing that you think, whatever, like, I'll do it because I know it's the right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
but then finding that piece that differentiates you and makes you different and helps you grow.
Yeah.
That's the core, I think, of what I want.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's the differentiating factor, right? You know, we've all heard the saying, you know, find a job that you love and you'll never work a day in your life,
mm-hmm.
or some variation of that. And, you know, I've found that, you know, and for me, like, our industry can be engulfed by regulations, you know, talks about fees and strategy and what have you. But I've always gone to the core of what I know is that if I don't understand what that consumer's needing, then I just can't pitch them what I need to pitch them.
You can't.
And every organization, every business has a bottom line. You know, don't get me wrong. But my premise has always been the goals are the goals. If you just focus on the goals purely in and of itself, then you've lost sight of what you're really doing is helping people.
100%. It's so funny because I am the kind of person who very much gets, like, caught up in a goal. I'm like, oh, I want to make this much. I want my business to make this much. And so how do I make this much? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you start to do it and you like feel good about it. And then you realize, okay, but now I need to like circle back to what my core value is. And my core value is I want to help people. So while it's great if my business hits this like magic number that I've created mm-hmm. arbitrarily in my mm-hmm. head, doesn't mean anything right. if it doesn't last. And it doesn't mean anything if I've sacrificed that like belief system that I mm-hmm. have for the sake of it. And so it's so nice to like hear that of you. Like I didn't already know, but like it's so nice to hear that of you.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to seeing how it all plays out with the awesome people we meet too.
Yeah, and I think that's really where it is that I'm not willing to compromise myself and our organization and team. We're not willing to compromise ourselves just for the number.
Right.
Right? Because numbers are only month over month, year over year, they change, they vary.
Mm-hmm.
But the clientele, the people that you work with, their lives are dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're just focused purely on the bottom line, you're just never going to be able to capture what the value is of your business.
Right.
Because you lose sight of the very people that you need to keep your business going.
100%. That was literally the conversation. Like it's so funny. Like the exact conversation I had with that person before. I pitched her. I have packages and whatever, and I pitched her something mm-hmm. that was less than my normal base package because she didn't need my base package.
Sure.
And she was like, "Oh, so I don't have." I'm like, "No, because if you don't need it, I'm not going to sell you anything you don't need.
Right.
I'm not going to force you into something you're not ready for.
Right.
And when you find that you love whatever I've done and you wish there was more, well, guess what? It exists." I would much rather you start small,
mm-hmm.
feel good about something,
mm-hmm.
and then continue to come back. So I imagine in your situation, it's the same thing. Start
yeah.
small. When you feel good about it,
exactly.
You come back.
And that's just it, is that I tell people that Rome wasn't built in a day,
mm-mm.
right? You got to take small steps one at a time.
Right.
Right. We all handle financial things differently. All of our households are different. Everybody's emergency savings balances are different. All of our bills are different. So there's no cookie cutter approach to everybody should do this.
Right.
Right. And to paint with a broad brush and say, you know, everybody should have a Roth IRA or everybody should have a stock or everybody should. That's just a false way of kind of, you know, painting that idea that everybody should do it.
Right.
Not everybody has the means to do it. I think this last year, almost to the date, if we look at what the pandemic has done, it's devastated families,
mm-hmm.
right? Many families have lost their jobs, you know, lost their livelihoods, lost their savings, lost their homes, and they're scrambling now to figure out how do we recapture what we had pre-pandemic.
Right.
And so this idea that if I just came to them and said, well, you should have a Roth IRA, and just not have any wherewithal to know that they're suffering.
Right, like that's not an option for in their mind. They just want to know, like, how can I make sure when?
How am I going to get to the end of the week?
Right. How am I going to get to the end of the week? How am I going to get to the end of the month? What am I going to do if this happens again?
Right. Exactly. And there's, you know, many statistics out there that talk about how little savings many, you know, families have across the U.S. for a basic emergency. Right. And I think about that. Now, wealth management, a lot of people think of us as guys in suits.
Right.
You know, with nice ties. We all drive Ferraris and we all have yachts. And the simple fact is, there's a small slice of that out in the wealth management industry. The vast majority of it is individuals who are working hard every day to make a difference in people's lives.
Right.
Right. And what I think about when I think about our industry is that, you know, it's such a dynamic industry. The shift in generational wealth is happening already.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents are getting older. Our grandparents are in the late stages. And there's going to be trillions of dollars of wealth being transferred from one generation to the next. And if there's not financial advisors and wealth management advisors and people out there that's giving good advice, guess what's going to happen?
It gets squandered away.
It
ends.
Yeah. And the generational wealth is somewhat dissipated,
mm-hmm.
right? And by those inactions. So that's where for someone like me, I'll be 34 in May. My goal is that other people that are my age can look at me and say, hey, like, you're in this industry. How did you get here? And, you know, what advice can you impart to me? I will do whatever I can, you know, within reason to help somebody out, right? And I want to make sure that people are on the right track, doing the right things, making the right decisions. And what I always tell people is if you never hear from me again, all you will have been left with is better information than you walked into that meeting with.
100%.
Right. My goal is not to preposition you with something. My goal is not to get you to an end point. My goal is hopefully you have a better understanding of finances, you know, after you've left my meeting, that you feel comfortable enough to come back to a second meeting to say, hey, you mentioned these following items. Can we just do a follow-up on those things and you know, go from there? So, you know, my hope is that that's how I kind of carry myself. You know, as I'm a VP and I have goals and I have, you know, things that are, you know, given to me by the organization and I'm okay with that. That's part of my role. But I just don't look at the goals as a monetization of human beings.
Right.
I just can't. That's just not who I am. Now, being a VP has its challenges, right? I've got a total of 8 staff members that report to me directly. And they, you know, there's good days and bad days. And so there's challenges there in and of themselves. So I love what I do, though. Wouldn't change it for anything in the world, right? I get to work with a great team of individuals. We have very diverse backgrounds, very diverse knowledge bases. And so, you know, there are challenges some days, but most days are better than others, you know, and we have a great team where we can collaborate. We discuss things. It's very, you know, we discuss topical things like regulation and what have you, because we have to stay up on it. We also talk about things like, hey, you know, we realize that this remote work strategy was difficult. You know, how do we work through that together and make sure that's better for the future?
Yeah, well, and surrounding yourself with like-minded people like that, I imagine, especially with you being in the position that you're in, is so important, because then you know, when I'm not here, these people are going to still take those values that we as a credit union hold, but that I hold, and that I want to make sure that future clients, customers, whatever you may call them, know that you hold.
Right.
So that it's consistent no matter what, too.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think it's so important that, you know, managers and supervisors are able to disconnect, even business owners, right? Imagine being a business owner and not being able to walk away from your business because you're so worried about how your staff are going to run the business when you're not there, right? That's got to be a weird feeling.
It's bizarre when it happens, because I'm very fortunate. I've got a staff that's, like, really cool. But there have been times where I've been like, oh, my gosh, I can't take a day off.
But I'm
I
sure,
can't leave.
Yeah, I'm sure you've worked at organizations or worked in places where, you know, you don't feel that level of trust with your manager, or supervisor, or business owner. And that friction can be such a breakdown in morale for the entire team.
And the success, volatile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the success of the organization. So, you know, I think people that empower their employees to, you know, invest into the business, right, and empower their employees to take charge and take accountability and empower the employees to take accountability and hold others accountable, realize that my business title as a vice president of Langley Financial Services is just that. It's a business title. That's what's on my resume. That's what's on my, you know, performance evaluation. That's the title. But if I give some of that quote unquote title or power to my team, they feel like, wow, hey, I can take charge of this and I can own a piece of this.
Right. Well, it makes them care more. Exactly. Not that they wouldn't have cared already, but it makes them care more. They feel more, like you said, ownership. They feel more aligned
more engaged,
with it. Yeah.
Right. And my goal is to engage them in a way where they feel challenged. And there are times where they come to me and I always joke with them and I say, hey, you know, don't come to me with a problem. Come to me with a problem and a solution.
Right.
Because I want them to know that they can offer the solution. It doesn't always have to be me.
Right.
Because if I'm the only one offering solutions, then I'm the only one speaking.
Right.
I think everybody should speak. Right. Everybody has an opinion. As I mentioned earlier, we have diverse backgrounds. We have over 100 years of experience on our team, right, in the workforce. And so that diverse background, that diverse expertise and knowledge, everybody's got something to say and something to contribute. And that contribution is such a huge part of, you know, the overall well-being of my team, right? And I think it's so important that teams and organizations and businesses more importantly, have that dialogue to make it easy to have that cultural conversation and say, hey, we're all in it together. Mm-hmm. Right? We're all in the same boat together.
Right.
Right. We all got to row in the same direction. Otherwise, we're going to go the wrong direction.
Right. And that's, I mean, you like, that's the perfect, like, button. Like, that's the whole point of what we're doing and who, like, the way that we're going to talk to people and the way that I want business owners to talk about things. It's, you know, great to celebrate successes. It's also great to celebrate the growth that comes in failure. It's also great to be honest when things are tough to a degree.
Sure.
It's also great to find those true connections because when you do, even like you're saying, from VP to VP to employee, but also from like business owner to client, I want them to feel ownership of Misty Saves the Day. And I think everybody should feel that way about the places that they spend their money. You know, you need to feel that when you go out to eat. You need to feel that when you support any small business, right? Like that you're taking a little piece of ownership in that person's livelihood in those, you know, 12-hour days that they're working 7 days a week. You are a piece of that. And even if it's tiny, I think it's our jobs as business owners and entrepreneurs and, you know, higher ups to then share that story.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I would say, you know, one of the things that I enjoy about where I patronize small businesses is that I'm able to go on social media and give them a quick shout out. Right? Imagine the days of like the early 90s when you had a small business and you didn't have social media.
Right.
And it was all word of mouth and there was very little lift unless somebody wore a t-shirt or something or a sticker or something like that. Nowadays, all you gotta do is have a hashtag, right? And you have a hashtag, you have an at symbol, and you can quickly give a shout out to that business. I think it's so important with small businesses, especially what's happened this last year, you know, with them, you know, being really hurt.
Right.
By this pandemic. There's been, I think about that so often because I've got small business clients, right? And I deal with people who own small businesses and of all walks of life. And I think about how their lives have fundamentally changed by what's happened this past year. And how can we do that quick little shout out that, you know, just tagging them in something?
It takes 2 seconds.
Leaving them a nice Google review.
Yeah.
You know, just to say, hey, you know, you guys just crushed it, and I want other people to know, right? You know, recently we had a conversation about Google reviews and where we ranked, right? I'm like a level 5 magi, right?
Right, and I'm like not even close, and it's so embarrassing because it's literally my job.
Yeah,
like you and my husband and our friends. I'm like, y'all are in it with the Google reviews, but it's so important. Like when you guys did, when you guys were talking about that, and I realized it, I was like, oh my gosh, I really need to be so much. But I like. I'm a Facebook reviewer.
That's cool.
I'm a social media manager.
That's okay.
I would be that in a Facebook reviewer.
Yeah, Google reviews is just my medium.
Well, it's also better for SEO. We don't need to go on all that, but it's better for SEO, so I understand. Yeah. Google reviews is actually a better medium.
Yeah, and so for me, when I go into a business, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, you're going to get a Google review from me, right? If your business was phenomenal, I'm going to leave you a paragraph and let you know. So that way the next person that touches that says, oh, wow, this individual had this great reaction and this great interaction. But also, if your business is not running properly and you need to know about it, sometimes it's hard to hear about it in the moment, right? Because I've given businesses feedback where I'm like, hey, that service wasn't where it needed to be. Mm-hmm. I work in client service. I get it.
Right. Like, I want to know.
Yeah.
Like, as a business owner, I want to know, and I want to be able to address it, and I want to be able to address it appropriately, and I want to be able to address it to my potential client. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to address it to anyone who was involved.
Yeah.
And then I want to, like, figure out a way to make a change. And so, like you were talking about earlier, when, you know, you have staff that comes to you with a problem, come to you with a solution, I want that of, like, the people that I work with, too.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you don't like something. I am here to listen.
Mm-hmm.
I can come to you with a solution. I've got a few. What's your solution? And I don't mean that in, like, a catty way, but, like, I really want to know, like, what makes this easier for you? What makes it better for you? What makes it anything?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, and I'll consider it, because you are going to have ideas that I don't have.
Yeah, and I think the best businesses that thrive are the ones that actually take that feedback and are willing to make the change.
100%.
You know, I've dealt with large businesses, medium-sized businesses, small businesses, where I've said, hey, guys, like, here's how I would have done it. Take my you know, words for what it's worth. It's a great, you know, take it for a grain of salt. And some of them have made that change. I've seen it. And that little change can make such a huge difference for somebody else.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, am I saying that every business out there is perfect? No. But, you know, I think business owners, whether you're a huge corporation all the way down to a mom and pop with four employees or two employees or one employee, should be open to feedback.
Yeah, agreed. Completely.
And that feedback is something that's important.
Yeah. Well, I'm stoked for all the things that we're going to do with this podcast and with you. And
thanks for having me on.
The world gets to know you like I know you, which I'm very excited about, too.
Yeah.
They can't see my grand gestures, but I'm making them.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate you giving me the floor to kind of discuss, you know, my passions and who I am. And, you know, I have no doubts that this podcast will be one of the most successful ones out there.
You're the best.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks.